Welcome to Payment Matters. I'm your host, Jeff Lynn. Thanks for tuning in. On the show, we talk about the ever-changing landscape of healthcare payments and the impacts to healthcare payers, providers, and consumers. You can follow the conversation on Twitter at hashtag Payment Matters and follow me at Jeff B. Lynn. I'm really excited about today's guest. His name is Eric Jensen. He's the Chief Product Officer of Avia. Eric, really great to have you on the episode today. And maybe for our listeners today that don't know about you or Avia, maybe tell us a little bit about your background and experience.
Sure, absolutely. Well, first off, thanks for having me on the program today. So by way of background, I started the first part of my career in management consulting and spent about a decade with McKinsey and Company. It was really during that period of time that I caught the healthcare bug. Had done a fellowship with McKinsey Global Institute, which is their economic research group, looking at the economics of the U.S. healthcare system and why it was so expensive. And from that point forward, I was really hooked on healthcare. Did a variety of work with payers, providers. I was based in Washington, D.C., and did work with the federal government. Ton of fun. And yet I sort of had a yearning to be able to build something for myself and not just advise others. And was fortunate enough at this moment in time, probably back in 2012, to meet the co-founders of Avia, who were thinking about getting this business off the ground and running at that time.
What kind of work does Avia do for healthcare clients?
Yeah, so Avia's gone through its twists and turns over the period of time of building this business, but the headline is that Avia is a member-driven professional services firm. And in particular, we work with health systems to support them in their digital transformation efforts. What we've done is we've used membership as a foundation for ongoing relationship with the health systems that we work with. We have about 50 health systems in our network. And so while many professional services firms talk about their commitment to long-term relationships, we've actually built that commitment into our business model. The second thing that is unique about Avia is the power of the network. So we've been very intentional about being a conduit to knowledge and expertise, not just representing ourselves as the experts. We do have experts, but we also know that oftentimes people want to be able to talk to and connect with the individuals who are solving the same on the ground challenges. And so we serve as that conduit. That's a bit about Avia. And what we do with our members is help them build digital capabilities. So that could be anything from building up their digital front door to thinking about how to use robotic process automation to a variety of other digital capabilities.
Digital is the operative word there. Clearly, having been in healthcare myself for I think close to 25 years here, digital's been a tough challenge here for a lot of healthcare clients. And clearly, with your membership of 50 members here, what's happening with their client with your members here in terms of digital adoption, and where do you see that going?
Well, it's interesting. So one, it is and has been a slog. So it's taken, you have to be sort of a true believer. And in the early days, when we started Avia back in 2012, at that moment in time, we were oftentimes going to health systems saying, hey, you need to be thinking about this. And it was at best a coin flip as to whether somebody at a health system would say, yeah, actually, this is important. We've come quite a long way over the last 8 years. In particular with COVID, we have just seen a tremendous amount of both interest and frankly commitment to going through a digital transformation. And that's not to say that this is easy or that health systems have solved through all of the issues, but it is to say that their leadership recognizes that this is something that they've got to be able to solve for if they're going to be if they're going to have sustainable business models going into the future.
I want to highlight one thing you just said, which is the sustainable business models. Like, what do you mean by that? How would you describe how becoming digital would make these healthcare providers and payers create that business model for long-term success?
Well, look, I mean, if you were to look at the industry, writ large, you've got a sector that I think prior to 2020 had net operating margin somewhere on the order of 3%. And the latest data that I saw from 2020 suggested that on average, the net margin was at 0.3%. And so that's a representative of a sector that certainly has some real financial pressures in front of it. But there's still a tremendous amount of spend. And so, as you look at, all of the various high-tech companies, whether it be Amazon or Microsoft or others, they have to be able to fuel their continued growth. And they're looking at this $3 trillion industry and sector and saying, where can we capture a piece of the pie? And so, from our vantage point, and this is something that we have ongoing dialogues with our members about, is sustainability of the traditional health system is going to require that these health systems start to put in place some of the tools of the trade that you see high tech companies put in place. It's really fascinating. I mean, if you think about it, the health system didn't really even put in, didn't even fully commit to EMRs until the High Tech Act was placed back in, I think, 2008 or 2009. And so it's been a little bit of a slow ramp to get to this place where the healthcare sector has embraced digital as an imperative. But I think we're very squarely in this moment where they're now saying, yes, we need to act, and how do we best go about that?
That's interesting. Yeah. And I remember those meaningful use acts, which is to incent EMR adoption. And the question here is going to be interested in your point of view here, which is the old Field of Dreams adage, if you build it, will they come? and you're right, exactly. You go to healthcare conferences out there, right? There's an app for everything that's out there here. And interested in your point of view here, how do you drive digital adoption pre-COVID? And interested in kind of your point of view about post-COVID, what happened there? And so, yeah. Like, I call it the secret sauce to drive that adoption. What's your point of view on that?
Yeah. Well, you've stumbled onto a question that's kind of near and dear to my heart, because frankly it gets right at the root of the issues that we have tried to solve for over the course of Avia's history. So in the early days of Avia, our entire orientation was, how do we drive adoption? How do we drive adoption? How do we drive adoption? And we started first with this premise of, hey, if people just knew what was out there, if we could decipher the buzzwords and really offer, a perspective on what companies actually did and how it would be valuable, then people would act. And that was necessary, but insufficient. And so we broadened our mandate to really start to get at, business case development and planning for, work requirements and integration related issues. And that was necessary, but insufficient. and then we subsequently broadened and got very involved in, frankly, just doing a lot of stakeholder alignment. I mean, one of the challenges of driving adoption is that these are very complex organizations with lots of different stakeholders who have roles that are very interdependent. And so that means bringing people to the table. We used to host these sessions where we would look at a range of vendors, and we would bring various constituents from multiple health systems into the room. And sometimes we were introducing people that hadn't even talked to each other historically. And I reference that simply because it it gives you a sense of what the, you know, of what the challenge is in getting some of these things to take root. So all of that said, you know, our experience, at least within our network, is that each of these systems is you know, chopping away at each of these kind of historical, you know, barriers to change, and really starting to get momentum and, you know, and seeing some of the results of what digital can do, in particular, I'd say in the consumerism space, where there's probably been the most energy and appetite across our network.
Got it. So you know, that makes sense here with your network here. As long as you align the internal constituents, you're going to get kind of more broad-based agreement about that sort of the digital experience here. One question here is, like, even if you get the organization aligned here and if you offer digital front-end products to the consumers, especially from a consumerism perspective, are consumers really leveraging and adopting? And do they like the digital experience more? What are you seeing in the from your network? What you're seeing there?
Yeah, well, like it's a great question, Jeff, and it's fascinating, right? Because, you know, if you were to go back 2 years ago, even as a sort of self-professed digital evangelist, I often didn't use virtual health or video visits or even asynchronous communication with a physician. And oftentimes that was either because it wasn't offered, or if it was, I wasn't aware of it. And what's interesting is that I really do think that COVID has been a game changer with regard to consumer expectations and awareness of what is possible across our entire network. Virtual health visits absolutely skyrocketed, and particularly last year, they have certainly tapered off from the early months, but none of them have returned to baseline and are just orders of magnitude higher than they had been in 2019. So, you know, it's hard to imagine that consumers haven't changed their expectations as a result of having that experience. I'll just, you know, reference a personal anecdote. This week has been bad for pollen and seasonal allergies, which prompted me to think, okay, maybe I need to get something more of a prescription strength antihistamine, and I don't want to go to the doctor in person to make that happen. I know exactly what I want. It should be something that should be able to be solved remotely, and I think I know that those options exist. And so, in many ways, I think that is just a small example of probably what's on the collective minds of many consumers out there.
Got it. That's exciting here. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Payment Matters. I'm joined by Eric Jensen, Chief Product Officer of Avia, and we're discussing the digital transformation of healthcare. And so, Eric, I'm just going to, you know, piggyback on that, which is, you know, the telehealth, we've heard quite a bit about the digital adoption of that. And hopefully we are in the tail end of this pandemic here. Where do you see this going in the next 2 or 3 years? Sounds like the spark has been ignited in terms of digital adoption with telehealth. Where do you think this is going to lead? Like where else do you see the digital transformation accelerating? Are there other areas outside of telehealth that you see that happening?
Yeah, sure. Well, just one final comment on telehealth. I mean, it will be interesting to see how much of that activity remains the principal purview of health systems versus payers versus other players in the space. The Teladoc, Livongo merger is just suggestive of those dynamics continuing to change. And so it's a space that is worth continuing to monitor and measure. But I'd say a couple other areas that I would call out as ones which we're hearing a lot of interest in from our member health systems. Staying in the consumer area, we've heard a tremendous amount of interest in CRM and putting those kinds of capabilities in place to be able to offer more personalized experience to patients. And then within the realm of more what I'll call operational infrastructure, particularly in light of some of the financial challenges health systems are facing, a lot of them are thinking about what are the activities that we can automate, digitize, that sit in the back office. And so this could be a lot of rev cycle related functions, in some cases some sort of manual clinical oriented work, robotic process automation, which I'd say we're in the early days of, at least within healthcare, certainly represents some pretty significant promise in terms of being able to drive efficiencies in that area.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask, you mentioned this at the very beginning here, the large tech companies that are out there that see the $3 trillion pie of healthcare and the chances to be more digital like that. How should health systems be looking at those other big tech companies here? Do they view them as competitor, collaborators, partners?
It is one of the strategic questions that I think health system executives need to be asking themselves. Depending on the system, it may be a competitive situation, or it might be a cooperative type of situation. But that needs to really be sorted through very thoughtfully. I mean, I think many people saw the announcement. This probably would have been called 12 or 18 months ago, about the Google and Ascension relationship, and there was a little bit of skittishness about that. Although behind closed doors, a lot of our health system clients were saying, "Yeah, we're kind of thinking through some of the same related issues." Fundamentally, the question is like, where do you buy, build, or partner to be able to acquire the capabilities that are necessary to compete in the future? And I think very rarely is the right answer going to be, "Hey, we should just go build these capabilities." It's too, it's not core to the mission of health systems. It's too slow. It's too expensive. But partnering oftentimes can be the right answer. And I think in particular, health systems should be looking not necessarily always to the very large players, but to the more entrepreneurial community to be able to build those assets and capabilities.
What do you tell to those executives that are, who are looking to go digital? Is there a prescribed roadmap? What are the things that they should be really thinking about as they want to kind of engage with their consumers, either in the clinical or the revenue cycle side, to be more digital? It sounds simple. it's like, hey, be digital, right? Why not? Yeah, that's easy, right? But it's what are the hard questions or the hard things that they should be thinking about to tackle the sort of the be digital concept?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, look, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer to that question. In addition to helping build digital capabilities for our members, we are very often asked to do, both digital strategy and roadmap development. And there's some commonalities from system to system, but generally speaking, it'll depend upon where they are, what the competitive environment is in a given market, that will dictate, what the plan and course of action will look like. But to specifically address your question of what's required to make that successful, one of my headline comments and perspectives would be, you know, don't underinvest. You know, what I mean by that is not that you need to go out and spend a bunch of money with third-party vendors to, you know, buy these tools and have overlapping capabilities and all those kinds of things, but rather make sure that you've made an adequate amount of investment in all of the change management that's required within a health system to get, you know, people to change behaviors, work through issues. I mean, think about how much of a heavy lift it was, back to the high tech comment, to get EMRs in place. And that was a single tool, obviously a very foundational one, but just massive change management efforts to get those things up and running. Well, now you're talking about, you know, dozens of potential other, you know, capabilities that need to be able to be put in place. And that just, that requires, you know, boots on the ground, driving transformation, tracking progress, providing visibility, ensuring that course correction happens. That's often something that folks can't, you know, you certainly can't do that off the side of your desk. There needs to be, you know, dedicated people and resources to make those kinds of things happen.
I mean, you talk about change management, and I think that that's clearly a very important aspect of this. But one of the things you said earlier was also about the personalization of the personalizing the consumer experience. What exactly does that mean?
Well, yeah, if I had our consumerism experts on the you know, on the podcast, they would really talk about this on three dimensions. Know me, to connect me, and then finally, third, orchestrate my care. And maybe I'll talk a little bit about each of those in turn. So the know me piece of this, I think goes back to this point I raised earlier about having a robust CRM in place. And that's not just, you know, going out and buying a bunch of Salesforce licenses, but it's also about making sure that you have the appropriate data infrastructure and data feeds in place to be able to collect all these things and ascertain the right things about a given patient from that information. And then the last thing I would say as it relates to CRM or knowing me is there are simple things or subtle touches, if you will, about how health systems need to use that information to interact with their patients. On the connect with me, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, communications, asynchronous communications with patients. I think text-based communication has huge promise to establish a more ongoing relationship between a patient and a healthcare provider. One of the challenges with not using technology is that people may not, you know, see a doctor, but once a year or maybe even less often. And so I think text-based communication holds huge promise for solidifying a stronger relationship with patients. And then, you know, lastly, in the orchestrate my care category, this is all about, you know, helping patients navigate, you know, through the system, which is clearly very complex, and ensuring, especially for the frequent users, that they don't get, you know, lost during transitions of care. And again, that requires a really robust, you know, data infrastructure to be able to share that data across, you know, multiple systems and multiple care providers.
Got it. Sounds like a pretty important roadmap for a lot of organizations here as you talk to that. Last question here. You've seen healthcare. You've been involved in healthcare for quite some time here, and you know, healthcare is not perfect here. But what would you like to see in 5, 10, 15, 20 years? Like, what should healthcare look like in 20 years from now? And do you have a magic pill that could wish this into existence? What would that be? Like, what would that be? What would you like to see?
Wow. 20 years is a long time, or at least it feels like a long time. You know, the High Tech Act was about 12 years ago, and I do think we've had quite a bit of change between, you know, then and now. You know, my sense of healthcare 20 years out from this, I think it'll have a couple elements. I think that it will allow patients to be more empowered in getting to the right care when they need it. And that's going to be through the use of a variety of technologies to allow them to get information when they need it and not have to search the web for all of that. So that's thing one. Thing two is, I think some of the incentive problems are going to get resolved as the payer provider dynamic, continues to change. I think, value-based care has been slower to come and emerge than many people in the space might have anticipated. But there's some big players throwing a lot of capital into, whether it's fully capitated care provider relationships or, Optum, being one of the largest employers of physicians in the country. And so that dynamic, I think, will also change the experience of care. So I think those are two of the things that will have a material effect. The big open questions about the role of artificial intelligence and what role that will play in 20 years. I don't have my crystal ball there, and maybe I'm just not creative enough to think through how that plays out. But that'll probably be a question for another day.
Those are the payment matters we're tackling today. I want to thank Eric Jensen for joining me today. And Eric, for our listeners, where can they go to learn more about you and Avia?
Sure, absolutely. Well, feel free to check out our website at aviahealth.com. And my Twitter handle is ES_Jensen. So Jeff, thanks so much for inviting me on the program today.
And thank you once again, Eric. And thank you to all of you who are listening in. Remember that you can listen to this episode weekdays at 4:30 a.m., 12:30 p.m., and 8:30 p.m. Eastern. You can also listen to this on Apple Podcasts and Google Play Music. Just say, Alexa, play Healthcare Now Radio. If you have a comment about the episode of the show, follow hashtag Payment Matters or connect with me on Twitter at Jeff B. Lynn. You can learn more about my show at healthcarenowradio.com or at instamed.com. Until next time, I'm Jeff Lynn.